It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 72 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So we've been talking a lot about the upcoming Wave 11 ships that are going to release here imminently. So this week we wanted to shake things up a little bit and dive a little bit into the history of X-Wing and also some of the design elements in X-Wing.
So instead of new stuff, we're going to be talking about old stuff.
And for you listeners who haven't been playing the game quite as long as we have, me and Carson both started back around Wave 4 of X-Wing, but a lot of people have started playing the game since then, of course. So we wanted to give a quick kind of guided tour through a selection of upgrade cards from the early game's history that we selected based on kind of a certain set of criteria.
Yeah, so we selected upgrade cards that really took the game outside of its core starter set design. The cards that really pushed the frontier in the design of the game. And these cards that pushed the design, of course, also had pretty significant tournament impact.
Yeah, so let's get started. All right, so to start out this discussion of X-Wing cards from the game's history, today we're going to focus on just waves 1 through 4, just to keep our focus pretty narrow there so we can kind of explain these things in more detail. To start off, we have to go all the way back to September of 2012, when the game released. We had the X-Wing core set, along with Wave 1, actually, release September 14th of 2012.
Yeah, so here we got, of course, the base game that we all know and love. That's why we're here. The original design, pretty elegant. But even within that first release, there's cards that altered the dynamic of the original game rules.
Well, in looking at the core set and Wave 1, a lot of these upgrade cards helped define what the game of X-Wing was, kind of set that baseline standard for how the game is played. The first upgrade, it seems kind of apt. The first several waves of X-Wing focused in exclusively on ships that appeared in the original trilogy of Star Wars, Episodes 4, 5, and 6. So it's no surprise that one of the most powerful cards in the game, actually throughout its entire lifespan so far, is also one of the most iconic characters from Star Wars. We're, of course, talking about the R2-D2 astromech upgrade card.
R2-D2 is a unique 4-point astromech that reads, after executing a green maneuver, you may recover one shield up to your shield value.
Immediately, this card, I think, kind of speaks to the simplicity of the core game design, because this is a pretty easy card to understand. It's very simple in its text. You basically perform a green maneuver, you recover a shield. And it comes in at a relatively high point cost, even for what we saw at Wave 1. 4 points tends to be on the higher end of upgrade cards, especially throughout the first several waves of X-Wing. But the sheer power of this card is demonstrated by the fact that it's been a recurring entity throughout most competitive seasons of X-Wing.
Right, so a fundamental game mechanic is, of course, you get your starting hull and shield values, and that's it. That's all you have to work with, unless you have R2-D2. Now you can get those shields back after you lose them. So obviously a big advantage. Okay, if I'm the only one who gets to recover any health, I can, you know, work to outlast my opponent.
Well, and R2-D2's ability kind of stands apart from a lot of other abilities in that we didn't see anything quite equivalent to it for several waves. So the power of R2-D2 is clearly demonstrated by the fact that it's been a recurring entity all throughout the game's lifespan. There are not a lot of abilities in X-Wing that allow you to take damage back. There are a handful. There were two, actually, in Wave 1. We had R2-D2, of course, but we also had another astromech where you could roll a die to try and recover hull damage. But that card proved to be not quite efficient enough to make it worthwhile. You were already down to hull by the time you were using that ability, and it didn't necessarily activate every time, whereas R2-D2 is a very reliable ability. You perform a green maneuver, you get a shield back.
Right, so R2-D2 is obviously going to keep one of your ships around longer. To get the most value out of R2-D2, you want to put him on a high-impact ace, usually high pilot skill with good ability that's worth keeping around as long as possible.
Yeah, and we've seen, like I said, R2-D2 kind of recur all throughout the game's lifespan. In the first wave, you had a couple of very strong ships to put R2-D2 on. Luke Skywalker had a very defensive pilot skill ability where he could change a focus to an evade, so that combined well with trying to mitigate damage and then recover any damage you did take with R2-D2's ability. Wedge Antilles was fairly relevant once with a pretty strong pilot ability, and he was another one of those aces where you wanted that ability to keep him alive just a little bit longer to get as much value out of him as possible.
Right, and R2-D2 wasn't that great on the Y-Wings because they only have 2 green maneuvers, whereas the X-Wings had 4, so there's a lot more utility there. Then R2-D2 kind of faded away up until the E-Wing got released, and Cornhorn and R2-D2 are best buddies, and they really took the competitive scene by storm in Wave 6.
A lot of X-Wing players have felt that pain if they've ever played against a Cornhorn with R2-D2 and pushed the limit, where Cornhorn might tank a bunch of shots and just lose all of his shields and then just make a break for it with green maneuvers and engine upgrade, avoiding shots, and then regenerating all of its shields before it comes back into the fight. There's kind of fewer things more oppressive to a player in X-Wing than a very well-run and effective regeneration squad or ship.
And what the E-Wing also added was 3 green dice plus the ability to have an evade token and a focus token pretty efficiently, which meant that's a huge defensive threshold. And then I have R2-D2 regeneration on top of that.
And it seems like every time a new ship comes out with the Astromech slot now, we find a new use for R2-D2. R2's proven to be very strong on Poe Dameron in the T-70, and as well as ships like Nora Wexley in the ARC-170.
So any new Rebel small base ace with the Astromech slot, or heaven forbid we ever get a large base ship with the Astromech slot, R2-D2 will be powerful in any of those.
Now, looking at the rest of Wave 1, the other card we wanted to talk about from the initial release of X-Wing was a card that you actually don't see that often at high-level competitive play nowadays, but it had a really significant impact on the game early on. We're, of course, talking about Swarm Tactics.
Swarm Tactics is a 2-point elite pilot talent upgrade that reads, at the start of the combat phase, you may choose one friendly ship at range 1. Until the end of this phase, treat the chosen ship as if its pilot skill were equal to your pilot skill.
Now, this is a card that kind of emphasizes one of the cooler and more interesting game design elements in X-Wing, which is, of course, pilot skill. Pilot skill makes X-Wing interesting because it adds a lot of decision-making in the list-building side of the game. There was, and still is, a lot of nuance into how you choose your ships and how many points you invest to try and get your pilot skill higher than your opponent's pilot skill.
Yeah, at the base value, the pilot skill mechanic keeps it so that there's never really a solved meta. Because, you know, if the best list is at a set pilot skill, you could invest points to be above it. Or if everyone else is spending all of their points to be at the top pilot skills, then you could jump all the way to the bottom and save a bunch of points and work towards efficiency.
I was reminded recently of how important this card was early on. I was playing at a tournament where it was only Wave 1 ships and only Wave 1 upgrade cards, so a very limited selection there. You basically had X-Wings, Y-Wings, TIE Fighters, and the TIE Advance. And one of the recurring dominant lists you saw across multiple tables, usually about 6 ships, you'd have a Howl Runner with Swarm Tactics, another TIE ace like Mauler Mithil with Swarm Tactics, 3 Black Squadron TIE Fighters, which have Pilot Skill 4 and the Elite Pilot Talent slot, so they can take Swarm Tactics, and then usually like a Pilot Skill 1 TIE Fighter. So basically you'd have about 6 TIE Fighters. You can use Swarm Tactics to chain react, so your Howl Runner passes it to another ship, which becomes PS8, which passes Pilot Skill 8 to the next ship, which passes it to the next ship. So at the end, you have a bunch of ships activating at a very high pilot skill during the combat phase so that you'd be able to attack and wipe a ship off the board well before it had an opportunity to fire.
In the early stages of the game, action efficiency was not at its peak that it is now. And the main way to win games was destroy your opponent's ships before they have a chance to fire back. And so winning out on the pilot skill wars was really important. But it didn't matter if just like your 2 high pilot skill TIE fighters got to shoot first, because they probably weren't enough to wipe a ship off. You needed your whole squad to be firing at pilot skill 8 to wipe anything else out.
Now, Swarm Tactics has kind of fallen out of the limelight for a lot of reasons, some of them being that the Elite Pilot Talent slot is very important nowadays for other upgrade cards, and because the pilot skill game isn't necessarily the most important thing you're going for. You can have kind of a set threshold for what ship you put this on. If you're putting Swarm Tactics on it, you're not putting other possibly better Elite Pilot Talents. And if your opponent is really aggressive and just tries for a ship with Veteran Instincts or something to get its pilot skill that much higher, this could be an entirely wasted upgrade card.
Yeah, it did see a bit more use when the Rorik pilot came out for the Hawk, where you got to boost a ship's pilot skill value up to 12. And then if you had Swarm Tactics, you could take another ship up to 12. So there was some combo list there. But yeah, ever since its dominance in the first wave, it really hasn't been that impactful. And part of that was in the first wave, you didn't have that many choices for ships at high pilot skills. Now you can choose all of your aces to be at the same pilot skill, whichever pilot skill you want that to be. And so you just have a lot more options in pilot choices, which means you don't really need the Swarm Tactics card as much.
Moving ahead to February of 2013, we saw the release of Wave 2 of X-Wing, which included the Millennium Falcon, the Slave 1, the A-Wing, and the TIE Interceptor expansions. And there were a lot of very significant upgrade cards that came out of this wave.
Yeah, Wave 2 was probably the wave that drove X-Wing design the most.
And we could argue a little bit about which of these was the most impactful, but me and Carson kind of settled on at the top of the pack is the Push the Limit upgrade card.
That 3-point elite pilot talent, which reads, once per round after you perform an action, you may perform one free action shown on your action bar, then receive one stress token.
So this card saw some immediate play. It came in the A-Wing expansion, but it was basically stapled to TIE Interceptors from this point going forward. And it kind of set the baseline for good action efficiency on an ace ship.
Well, and even at that time, it also allowed them to take both a target lock and a focus for a heavily modified first attack or set up a munition strike.
And it was also important on defense for ships that really depended on dice variants up to that point. Things like the TIE Interceptor and the A-Wing have the three green dice, but with just a single token modification coming from a focus or an evade, oftentimes you'd be taking damage, which is especially brutal on ships like the TIE Interceptor, which don't have those shields to absorb criticals. Being able to use Push the Limit to take both a focus and an evade, or turtle up, as a lot of people call it, became kind of a baseline for defensive modification.
Right, and this card more than anything really pushed the power level of X-Wing, because the attacks needed to get through three green dice with focus and evade, those two dice attacks really didn't do it as much. This was kind of the beginning of those two attack dice ships starting to fall off.
Yeah, because once you had this really strong offensive modification from three attack dice ships and this really strong defensive modification from three defense dice ships, even having heavily modified two attack dice was often not enough to push through three green dice, a focus, and an evade. And unlike a card like Swarm Tactics, Push the Limit has proved to be an evergreen upgrade card where we keep seeing it become relevant in newly released waves of X-Wing. It's a popular choice on ships like Dash Rendar from Wave 5 or the Inquisitor from Wave 8.
Up next, we have Veteran Instincts. Increase your pilot skill value by 2. 1-point elite pilot talent. Like Swarm Tactics, this, of course, alters the set, you know, rigid pilot skill mechanic. Now, instead of just accepting your ace's set pilot skill, you can increase this by 2. Where this also pushes the game is now 9 is not the highest pilot skill. Now you can go all the way up to 11. And that ability to increase your pilot skill to higher, all the way up to 11, has really given the metagame part of pilot skill a lot more nuance to it. I mean, just this past Worlds, Tim and I both had our Fen Rao's at pilot skill 9 one-shotted by a pilot skill 11 Dengar. So our pilot skill 9 ship didn't even get to shoot once.
And that was a clear choice where going to pilot skill 11 was a metagame decision. It would be much more efficient in terms of using your attack dice to throw a different kind of elite pilot talent on there. But it was very relevant in those matchups to be able to fire at Fen Rao and destroy him before he can fire back. And I find Veteran Instincts interesting because it is a very simple ability, but it's done so much on the game going forward. I think it's clearly now a design consideration when new ships are being made. All right, if we're going to include an elite pilot talent slot on this ship, what are the maximum pilot skill thresholds we're going to hit here? And do we have to kind of control what our pilot skills are just so it doesn't get out of hand?
Right, so if we look at cards like Harrison Dula, who have an amazing repositioning ability, Veteran Instincts is one of the reasons she does not have an elite pilot talent slot, where that ability is just a little too powerful at pilot skill 9.
And I think it's also interesting because it kind of set the baseline value for what pilot skill is worth in terms of point cost for your squad. Early on in X-Wing, if we're looking at generic pilots for ships, typically the generics would be separated by 2 pilot skill as well as 2 points in cost. So a rookie pilot X-Wing comes in at 21 and is pilot skill 2, whereas a Red Squadron X-Wing is 23 and comes in at pilot skill 4. 1 squad point to 1 pilot skill isn't quite the right equation there. A pilot skill bump like that is a little bit less valuable than 1 point. So the ratio going forward actually started to change. If you notice generic ships that come out now, oftentimes they'll still be separated by 2 points of pilot skill, but you'll get an added benefit. Like moving from a generic without an elite pilot talent slot, you go up 2 points and you get an elite pilot talent for the cost of 2 squad points.
Or it's a named pilot with no elite pilot talent slot.
So another very influential upgrade card from Wave 2 was Engine Upgrade. This is a 4-point modification. Wave 2 is notable in that the modification upgrade was introduced in this wave. engine upgrade reads, your action bar gains the boost action icon. So this is important for a lot of reasons. So obviously it's great on ships like Cornhorn or Darth Vader and the TIE Advanced. One of the reasons it was really impactful on the game is because a large base ship with boost functions quite a bit differently than a small base ship with boost.
Right. I mean, the modification mechanic in general allows you to put actions on ships that don't normally get those actions. And large base ships almost exclusively don't get the boost action because it's just so much more powerful on that large base where you're moving so much farther. But engine upgrade lets you put that on any large base you want.
Yeah, so when we see ships like the YT-1300 or the Decimator, having that boost action on there and then also having a high pilot skill made these ships very effective at arc dodging. Suddenly you have the option here where you can perform relatively quick maneuvers like a four forward and then boost on top of that. If you've ever seen this on the board or performed this, you know it takes you almost halfway across the board.
Well, and it's particularly annoying on large base turrets where they don't need to get your ships in firing arc. So if they're able to just boost past you, then you don't have shots and they're getting shots regardless because they have a turret.
And it was waves 3 and 4 where we actually started to see these large base with boost ships dominate the metagame. Engine upgrade also has a lot of applications in small base ships. Ships like Cornhorn with Push the Limit love to have engine upgrade on there to give him that option to boost and or barrel roll.
So yeah, engine upgrade was really seen on large base ships or high pilot skill aces that wanted some more repositioning actions. Like Darth Vader, who, you know, has those two free actions and wants to get the most value out of that. So giving him access to another action and a repositioning one at that is amazing.
And it comes at a pretty steep point cost at 4 points, but that point cost isn't so bad if you're already investing a lot of points into a ship like you would with a Cornhorn or a Millennium Falcon.
Another thing that helped large base ships in their introduction was they had access to the crew slot. And one of the more notable crews, of course, was Gunner. Or Luke Skywalker. For 5 points, you get Gunner, which reads, after you perform an attack that does not hit, you may immediately perform a primary weapon attack. You cannot perform another attack this round.
And then, of course, the Luke Skywalker crew card, which is Rebel only, comes in at 7 points. It reads basically the same, except during the second attack, you can change one of your focus results to a hit result. Now, this is notable in that it's the first time we see in the game that you can perform multiple attacks in a round. Now, there's the caveat that your first attack needs to miss in order for you to perform the second attack, but this added a little bit more reliability to be able to put damage out on these high agility ace ships.
Gunner was one of the first mechanics where it wasn't increasing your damage output, but it was increasing your likelihood to do damage just by getting a second try.
And it gave you opportunities to try and push through ships that maybe had pushed the limit and could get focus and evade tokens. By your first attack might force them to spend a token so that they avoid it. Then your second attack is a little more likely to go through given that they have fewer tokens to spend on defense.
Now, the way to break the Gunner card is, of course, to do things that trigger on attack, which we really didn't have at Wave 2 too much. Gunner card really wasn't breakable until you got things that trigger on attack. Cards like Predator or Fire Control System that give you modifications regardless of how many times you're attacking, or things like Tactician or Darth Vader that are going to proc on each attack you make there. Yeah, so Gunner's been, throughout the history of the game, one of the enablers of a lot of different kind of power combinations because you're getting multiple triggers there.
Well, and its raw power is seen. It's another one of these what I call evergreen cards where it just keeps recurring, like Push the Limit. You see it on new ships that come out just because of its inherent flexibility and power. The last card we want to mention from Wave 2, we don't have that much to say in the context of Wave 2, but Heavy Laser Cannon is an upgrade card that became more relevant in later waves.
Right, so you could roll 4 dice with torpedoes before, but Heavy Laser Cannon was the first instance where it's kind of like upgrading your primary weapon value to 4 dice.
This is a 7-point cannon upgrade card. It's a secondary weapon with 4 attack dice and a range limitation of 2 to 3. And it reads, attack, attack one ship. Immediately after rolling your attack dice, you must change all of your crit results to hit results. Now, right off the bat, the value here is a little rough. I wouldn't say on its own, like in a vacuum, that Heavy Laser Cannon is worth that 7-point investment. Particularly on the ships that at the release of Wave 2, you could put it on, which was the Slave 1. Or even going into Wave 3 on the B-Wing. It did become very relevant later on when we started to see other ships that could take the cannon, notably Dash Rendar and the IG-88 Aggressor.
Wave 3 came out in September 12th of 2013. We got the Hawk 290, the Lambda-class shuttle, the B-Wing, and the TIE Bomber expansions.
Well, and one of the first upgrade cards that jumps out on me is one that was released in this wave along with the new upgrade slot.
It's one we talk about all the time still.
In this wave, we saw the first instance of the system upgrade slot, and with that, we saw what has continued to be the most powerful and efficient system upgrade, Fire Control System.
Fire Control System is a two-point system that reads, after you perform an attack, you may acquire a target lock on the defender. Now, the language there is actually one of the more important cards of Fire Control System. How acquire a target lock is different than perform a target lock action.
Yes, performing a target lock action allows you to acquire a target lock, but acquiring a target lock is a game mechanic separate from performing an action.
So this allows Fire Control System to proc as many times as you fire in a turn, whereas normally after you perform an action, you can't perform that same action again. Fire Control System works around that. It also allows it to work while stressed or any other thing that's going to deny your actions.
And this card has continued to be powerful, but it also started a trend in upgrade cards that allowed you to get modification or take actions effectively without actually having to spend your action after you move.
Right, and it also set the precedent for every card moving forward that gives you a target lock. It always uses the same wording, assign a target lock. From release, Fire Control System B-Wings were great. Fire Control System Lambda shuttles were great. You could also combine that with the gunner on the Lambda shuttle for what we call the buzzsaw effect, where you have two shots. The first one fires, doesn't hit. Now I get to acquire a target lock. My second shot, I now have target lock modification on it.
And that was a very powerful combination on the Lambda class, but we saw it become even more relevant and powerful upon the release of the IG-88 Aggressor, where you could combine it with IG-88 B's ability, a heavy laser cannon, and the Fire Control System. So you're basically getting that gunner-like effect from IG-88 B, and you're getting that modification potentially in the first volley of fire.
So another thing the Fire Control System does is it allows ships who don't even have the target lock action to acquire target locks. This was most notable on the TIE Phantom.
Yeah, the TIE Phantom has four native attack dice, which was a big benchmark in X-Wing, but it didn't have a native target lock, so it could really typically depend only on a focus token to modify those attack dice. But being able to include the Fire Control System on that ship allowed it to acquire a target lock, so it basically pick a target, and then it could get very heavy modification and really leverage those four attack dice to push damage through.
It's also been pretty impactful on ships that get to shoot more than once in a turn. So we have Corrin Horn, who can use his double tap ability, or Quick Draw, who gets to attack after a shield's lost, where to get the value out of those abilities where you're shooting twice in a turn, you need to have modification on all those attacks. Otherwise, it's kind of volatile in how impactful that ability is. But with Fire Control System, both those ships get a lot more consistency in the value of their ability.
Another card I want to mention quick, and this one I'd put more in the category of it being impactful at the time and kind of losing its potency as the game has kind of evolved, is Recon Specialist. This is a 3-point crew upgrade card. It came in the Hawk 290 expansion, and it reads, when you perform a focus action, assign one additional focus token to your ship.
Right, so here we're seeing that assign word being used again. And this is kind of the first case of where you can really double up and get two of the same token.
Yeah, it was just an evolution in the efficiency you could get out of a single action, which has become increasingly important in the game. It's kind of fallen by the wayside. Other crew cards and upgrade cards have outclassed it in terms of efficiency, but it was very important early on. It was a common choice on the Hawk 290, as well as ships like the YT-2400, being able to get that extra modification for either your offense or your defense.
Well, and even more recently, Kanan Jarrus's ability, who synergizes off of focus tokens, really appreciates getting that extra focus token from Recon Specialist.
And it did have the benefit at the time that it was taking up the crew slot, which is an important upgrade slot, but that also opened up potential elite pilot talent slots where you no longer had to depend on maybe push the limit to get some action efficiency. You could use that slot for a different upgrade card.
Right, so wave 3, we really started to see action efficiency move out of just the elite pilot talent slot. We see it in the system, we see it in the crew now, and I think that's a trend you start to see a lot more moving forward. the diversity of where you can get your action efficiency.
The last card we want to mention from Wave 3 is the Darth Vader crew card that came in the Lambda class expansion. We mentioned this earlier, but it was very relevant in the game, in the competitive game, for the next several waves because of its interaction with the Gunner upgrade card. Darth Vader is a 3-point unique Imperial-only crew card that reads, after you perform an attack against an enemy ship, you may suffer 2 damage to cause that ship to suffer 1 critical damage.
So Wave 3 really introduced direct damage that couldn't be evaded. And Darth Vader is kind of the most prominent of those.
Yeah, we did see it come. We did see this kind of guaranteed damage come in the form of the Auto Blaster turret, as well as 10 Numb, the B-Wing's pilot ability, where one of your crits can't be canceled, and Auto Blaster, where your hits can't be canceled. Those abilities were a little overcosted, so it was a little too expensive, and they were a little too unreliable to use effectively. Whereas Darth Vader is 100% reliable as long as you're getting an attack.
Obviously, there's heavy cost for the ability. You're paying points, a crew slot, and you're doing damage to yourself. But the ability to do a critical damage to, say, like an interceptor that only has 3 hit points when you're 10 hole Lambda, it doesn't matter if you do 2 damage to yourself. And you could take 2 shields and deal the critical result, which might be a direct hit. And that's even an even trade.
And clearly taking damage is not always ideal, but we started to see a lot of value in a ship like the Lambda class, which was relatively inexpensive, which could take Darth Vader on it to try and force damage through and just take that 2 damage at a time. This became very important come Wave 5 when we saw the release of the VT-49 Decimator, which had 16 hit points, so having to take that 2 damage to force a critical damage out there wasn't that bad of a trade.
Right, and obviously stacks well with Gunner, where you get to do this twice in a turn if you miss on your first attack. And this really allowed the Imperials the ability to deal with their own aces, which before then they kind of struggled with. Darth Vader's always been an important meta answer for Imperials when aces get out of hand.
Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. We're still waiting for payments to go through on Patreon, so we'll be announcing our July raffle winners next week. If you'd like to become a patron of the show and be eligible for the August raffle, please go to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today. Now, back to the cast. Before we get on to Wave 4, there are a couple smaller expansions that were released that provided some very relevant cards.
Right, so from the Imperial Aces, which gave us 2 different looking TIE Interceptors, we got the Royal Guard title for TIE Interceptors.
Royal Guard TIE is a 0-point TIE Interceptor-only title that reads, you may equip up to 2 different modification upgrades instead of 1. You cannot equip this card if your pilot skill is 4 or lower.
Now, we'll see the same thing with the A-Wings when they got their Ace expansion, but this is the first instance where you get to stack multiple of the same upgrade.
This was important for the survivability of Interceptors because they were struggling a lot against YT-1300s with the Gunner crew card. It was pretty reliable that you'd be able to push damage through them over time, and they at only 3 hit points, they weren't quite that durable. You would start to see things like a shield or hull upgrade on there, along with cards like Stealth Device or a Targeting Computer. But this title card became really important when we saw the release of Auto Thrusters in Wave 6.
Right, so then they were still able to take Auto Thrusters and then boost their defense or opt for the Targeting Computer offensive mod.
Recently, we've started to see more of these multiple of the same upgrade stacking upgrade cards, like the Voxeye title for the Kiraz in the upcoming Guns for Hire expansion,
which kind of takes the Royal Guard title to the next level.
After the release of the Imperial Aces expansion, we saw the first 2 epic expansions for X-Wing. These came in the form of the Tantive IV, as well as the Rebel Transport.
In the Rebel Transport, we got a bunch of astromechs for X-Wings and Y-Wings at the time. And the astromechs from the Rebel Transport have all been pretty impactful in the meta, the most notable of which was R3-A2, the unique 2-point astromech that reads, when you declare the target of your attack, if the defender is inside your firing arc, you may receive 1 stress token to cause the defender to receive 1 stress token.
This was kind of the start of the stress control mechanic that you could see in later lists, and it was kind of brought to its peak with the release of later upgrade cards like the BTLA-4 title, on the Y-Wing and twin laser turret, allowing you to load out what we call a stress hog, a Y-Wing that could fire multiple times, deal multiple stress in a round. And when a ship received two stress tokens, it was basically action locked for at least the following round.
Right, and we also saw this being used on Veteran Instinct's Wes Jensen during the height of Phantoms, where you could put that stress trigger out at pilot skill 10, and now the Phantom doesn't get to do their free cloaking action. Really, this has been like the most efficient stress control card at its time of release and still holds up as kind of premium stress control today.
In the Tantive IV expansion, we saw the release of several crew cards representing iconic characters from Star Wars. The one that had the most impact on the metagame was definitely C-3PO. C-3PO is a 3-point rebel-only crew card that reads, once per round, before you roll one or more defense dice, you may guess aloud a number of evade results. If you roll that many evade results before modifying dice, add one evade result.
So C-3PO really took the Millennium Falcon YT-1300s from pretty good to really amazing. The best value on C-3PO is when you're rolling the fewest number of defense dice. So the one agility for the Falcon works perfectly. You're most likely to roll zero evades. And so C-3PO gives you a guaranteed evade result if you call zero, because either you rolled no evades and C-3PO triggers, or you rolled an evade and then you got the evade from that.
And starting with the release of this card, we started to see some very oppressive Millennium Falcons enter the metagame. I think this is a very interesting card in that I feel like it, the way the players used it was completely different than I think the way it was intended to be used. The ability reads very much like a guessing game, like you're going to try and, oh, maybe if I roll one or two evades and I guess right, I get the extra evade. How players ended up using it was, well, the Millennium Falcon only has one agility die, so basically if I guess zero evade results every time, I will always get one evade result, which over the long term reduces a lot of damage from the Millennium Falcon.
And the Millennium Falcon also had access to the Falcon title, where you get the evade action. So you get an evade token, combine that with C-3PO for your guaranteed evade results. And if you're only being shot at by one ship a turn, you can use the evade token and C-3PO, mitigate two of that damage. Maybe take nothing, maybe take one or two damage, but you have 13 hit points for them to chew through very slowly at that point.
Late game, if it's one ship versus a Millennium Falcon, it was basically impossible to push any damage through. All right, finally, we go to June of 2014, where we see the release of Wave 4, which is basically about the time I started playing the game. This wave included the Z95 Headhunter, the TIE Defender, the E-Wing, and the TIE Phantom expansion.
But basically, the release was the TIE Phantom expansion. Actually, all of these ships have dominated metas at some point. We've had the Whisper meta, we've had a Corran Horn meta, we've had X7 Defender metas, and of course, Z95s have won multiple worlds.
So it's not surprising that in this wave we saw a lot of very important upgrade cards. The first one is one that ties directly to the TIE Phantom. The Advanced Cloaking Device upgrade card became a staple and was basically always tied to the TIE Phantom along with a couple other upgrade cards. Advanced Cloaking Device is a 4-point TIE Phantom only modification that reads, after you perform an attack, you may perform a free cloak action.
So this card, of course, made the cloaking on the Phantoms pretty powerful, where ideally you're the first ship shooting, and you get to fire, and then you get to cloak, getting the defensive advantage from cloaking, and kind of mitigated all of the drawback of cloaking, where you're not shooting.
Yeah, and before they changed the way the decloak mechanic worked, it previously used to be that you were allowed to decloak immediately before you revealed your maneuver dial, which gave you a lot of versatility in how you could respond to your opponent's movements. Now it happens at the very start of the activation phase, limiting it a little bit. But at the time this ship came out, it was a very oppressive combination, which is why a lot of people answered it by rolling out with more Han Solos with engine upgrade and gunner. And because of when Advanced Cloaking Device triggers during the combat phase, Veteran Instincts became a very important elite pilot talent card for the TIE Phantom. It allowed Whisper to move from 7 to 9 and Echo to move from 6 to 8, which if any ships fell below those pilot skills, they would have a very hard time pushing any damage through on either of those Phantoms. But Advanced Cloaking Device was not the only great upgrade card that was released with Wave 4. We also saw the release of two other very important cards. One of them kind of ties into the R3A2 Stress Astromech that we talked about earlier.
Tactician is a 2-point crew card that reads, after you perform an attack against a ship inside your firing arc at range 2, that ship receives one stress token.
So this is important because it's another way you can add a stress control mechanic to the game. And actually, this was one that was slightly abusable at a certain point, that they had to amend this card with the limited keyword at the start, so you could only have one per ship.
Right, because if you had a ship with multiple crew slots, you throw that on there, and each time you get it to trigger, they all trigger, and you could perhaps triple stress somebody.
It also tied in okay with Gunner, where if you fired at a ship inside your arc at range 2 and you missed, you get to fire again, and Tactician would trigger both times, dealing a stress token each time.
It's also part of the reason they re-clarified how the twin laser turret volley attack works, because originally you got to give 2 stress tokens if the defender was at range 2 on a twin laser turret shot. I think the biggest impact of Tactician was not necessarily that it was abusable in a lot of different ways, but it was stress control that was not limited to a faction, because Imperials had kind of the original stress control with Rebel Captive and Cath Scarlet, but then Rebels picked it up with R3A2. But this gave another tool for either faction at the time to add more stress control to their list. And then, of course, when Scummers released, they also got access to Tactician. And it wasn't unique, so you could put multiple of these in a list. You could give all of your B-Wings Tactician. And so it really allowed a different style of play.
So the last upgrade card we're going to talk about today is Predator. Predator, originally released in the TIE Defender expansion, is a 3-point elite pilot talent upgrade card that reads, when attacking, you may reroll one attack die. If the defender's pilot skill value is 2 or lower, you may instead reroll up to 2 attack dice.
Right, so this card's interesting from a few different perspectives. On first, of course, it's passive modification, which, where we talked about fire control system being sort of passive modification, where you don't really have to work for it other than you put the card on your ship. It's not really any drawback. It's not giving you stress or even requiring an action to get that efficiency. And then it's also kind of a meta check where if your meta is overrun with low pilot skill generics, then Predator can really punish people for using those.
Yeah, because Predator is good on two fronts. Even if you're not shooting at a ship with pilot skill 2 or lower, the ability to reroll one attack dice, which often when you're attacking might be all you have to reroll, is a powerful ability on its own for 3 points. Having that added value of, if the ship's even lower pilot skill, I get to roll extra dice, kind of started the movement towards pushing generic ships out of the game, or at least low pilot skill generics, and having a lot more high pilot skill ships be the more relevant force. I also think it's noteworthy because it was finally a quite powerful alternative to push the limit for ships that couldn't use push the limit as effectively.
Right, because Push the Limit was kind of limited to ships with good green maneuvers, whereas Predator is kind of, you can put it wherever you want.
Or even if a ship had good green maneuvers, if they didn't have a very diverse action bar or access to multiple actions you want to use multiple turns in a row, Predator was a great option. Well, there you have it, a kind of guided tour through the first 4 waves of X-Wing, looking at the upgrade cards that kind of shape the game going forward. Obviously, we have a lot more waves to talk about, which we'll cover in a future episode, but hopefully we've given you kind of a starting point if you're not familiar or if you needed a recap on how the game has kind of evolved since its inception.
Yeah, upgrade cards have really taken that core game concept from the core set and really pushed and expanded it in a lot of different dimensions. The first few waves were all really impactful on the course that those future upgrade cards take. They all kind of follow a lot of the same guidelines set by the first few waves.
So hopefully this episode provided some good insight onto how the game has developed and why the game has kind of taken the form that it has. All right, guys, before we wrap up, we just wanted to give a quick shout out to a Radio TCX listener who won a store championship. We're still in the middle of a store championship season, so if you do happen to win one, please send us a message letting us know where you won and what kind of list you were flying. This week, we want to give a shout out to Jeff Wilder. He won the Endgame Store Championship in Oakland, California.
Congratulations, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff was flying a list that I'm kind of familiar with at this point. Rear Admiral Chirinau with Veteran Instinct, Rebel Captive, Darth Vader Crew, Gunner, and Thermal Detonators, as well as an engine upgrade. And then Quick Draw with Adaptability, Fire Control System, Pattern Analyzer, Lightweight Frame, and Special Ops Training. So a huge congratulations, Jeff.
Yeah, great call on that Rebel Captive. I think that's so good right now.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter @RadioTCXPodcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and what other people might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a special shout out to Qualhog, who left us a review on iTunes, who said, "Our commentary on matches is spot on and paints a great match picture." Thank you, Qualhog.
And a thank you to everyone who's left us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.